we sometimes try and escape ourselves when we go into dancing, and that's good. We have to remember to work on ourselves as well, and that's a hard lesson that I've learned. That just because I'm a good dancer doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be a nice person. You have to also make sure that you're working on all the good qualities of you as a human as well, not just your dancing.
Hello and welcome back to Red Lips and High Kicks with your host, Lydia Holt. Thank you for tuning in for the last episode of season 2. I'm so sad to be finishing, but I'm so grateful for all my guests this year, all the new followers on Instagram, all the new subscribers here on your podcasting apps. Thank you so much for the love and support. I say this all the time, but it really does mean the most to me. This started as a little project to keep me busy during my lockdown. Never did I believe I would be talking to the people I'm talking to, having important conversations, and really feeling like people are listening, that people care, and that this is actually could be helping just one person. It really is a dream come true. So thank you for making my 2020 a little bit better. In today's episode, I talked to Robbie McMillan. Robbie is an Australian dancer who started out life at the Queensland Ballet. He's worked in contemporary companies. He's done several contracts on cruise ships before he moved to London to perform in the West End. He's done numbers like Cats, Flashdance and Chess, and really is an example of versatility. He's continued to grow and learn and change his career and evolve himself in the dancer he wants to be. It's really inspiring and definitely an example that we need to hear more of. I say this all the time, but it's so true. If I've been encouraged to have a less than ordinary career, to kind of follow my nose rather than staying in my lane, I think I would have been a little bit less upset and a little bit less hard on myself. And Robbie really is like that. He's honest and real and full of passion and vigor, and it got me so excited. So this definitely is one to kickstart you into January. You can follow us on Instagram at redlips.highkicks, and obviously click subscribe. But if you haven't listened to past episodes, they're all there available to you. And stay in touch. I will not be gone long, I promise. Season 3 is coming back with a bang, and there'll be more goodness, more wisdom, and more wonder to share with you all. But in the meantime, have a lovely, great, awesome, happy new year, and a great start to 2021. Thank you, and stay excellent. Hello, Robbie. Thank you so much for joining me today. How are you getting on?
I'm good. I've actually just gotten back from Scotland, actually. I teach in Scotland at a college in Glasgow on Thursday, Friday, Saturdays. And then I teach also online on Saturdays for Magnetic Studios. Lindsay and
yes,
Alex.
No, Lindsay and Alex really well. That's really nice.
I sort of, that's one of my jobs. I teach at other schools as well. But it's going good. It's going well. I teach at colleges mainly, just because they're ones that stayed open during the lockdowns, of course. So yeah.
Of course, of course. I mean, like, let's get straight to it, because this, finally we're coming to the end of 2020, and it's been just such a whirlwind. But what have you learned from this year?
I think the number one thing that I learned, I was thinking about this the other day, looking back on my year, I think the number one thing that I learned is that I can kind of, don't have to just rely on my dance career to get me through life. I think it was a time in our lives, this happened at a really good time, because I sometimes thought that I could only just perform. I never actually thought that I could teach. I never thought that I could choreograph, because I was never forced to do that. Mm. Because I've been in shows, I've been doing other people's work, I've been working continually, thankfully and gratefully, but I've never had to kind of do this. So it kind of taught me to pull my socks up and get to work a little bit. A lot of times in human history this happens. The human mind has to get to work in a way that you never thought it could. And it's taught me it happened, at a larger scale. It happened a lot during World War II. It happened a lot during the Great Depression of the 30s. To a much larger scale, I'm talking with those experiences. And we are experiencing something much less important than what happened then. That was obviously at a much higher magnitude of, I think that I've taught myself to, in the face of adversity, to get a job done. And I've also taught how to use a small corner of a room and turn it into a studio as well.
Exactly. I think that is the skill everyone has taken away from that.
Yeah, I think that's a big lesson. Get on with it a little bit.
No, and you're dead on. Like, every generation has their fight, and luckily we've had really lovely lives up until now. And like, again, like you said, it's nothing to the scale of what our grandparents and great grandparents went through. It is something that no matter where you were affected. And just as you said, you have to make a choice, like how you're going to respond to this. And yeah, it's been the first time for everyone, hasn't it?
Yeah, That's a big, so I think I don't want to, sometimes I don't want to come off too harsh when I say sink or swim, but it really has differentiated between where you want to push yourself and put your passion into. I chose choreography and teaching that I didn't think I could do professionally, to be honest. Mm. I really didn't. But that's where I chose to put my eggs.
No, it's good. And you're right. It's a lovely lesson to have to give you for your future. You never know when you're going to need that. And actually, there's always blessings there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I want to know, you've had a very versatile career and, you know, you're doing great things, like you said, with teaching now and Magnetic. It's an amazing project. But how did you get into dance?
I first got into dancing when I was about 5. My dad used to watch old movies of Fred Astaire on a Saturday afternoon. And I used to watch, he's kind of imitate him around the house. But I guess I've always been dancing sort of around the house. And then it wasn't until I was about 5, mum and dad were sick of me ruining all the pot plants and things. So they put me into class. And I actually remember hiding under the piano because it was just a room full of girls. And I've never seen so many girls in my life and I was just scared. So I just hid under the piano. I don't come from a dancing background. So I guess it just sort of came from watching things on TV. And just naturally having a movement quality, just naturally responding to music. And then since I started tapping, sort of started tapping at 5, then I've got into jazz. That's when my love of dancing really started. Yeah. And then I think I started ballet at 14 or 15, which is quite late. Mm. And then that's how it started, my love for sort of ballet. And then that's sort of pulled me into the ballet career route rather than going tapping. I kind of had a fork in the road, and I could either go ballet and do that, or I could go tapping, and I chose ballet. Sometimes I think, what would happen if I just done tap? But you can't regret anything. So I did ballet, and that sort of brought me into my first professional job.
It's so interesting, and that's such a common crossroads. I think it happens more than we realise, is ballet sort of stands alone, and then the other two are on the other side. It's sort of, it's one or the other. And I think so many times people do go to ballet just because it's, I don't know, it's the oldest one maybe, and that it's the safest one. But I also did the same, and I've had that thought so many times. It's like, what could I have been if I went straight into like a dance college, straight into like jazz? Like, what would it have been? I mean, I'm so grateful I wouldn't have changed anything, but it's really interesting.
I think it opened up more career opportunities, me doing ballet first, which I didn't realise until later on now. And I've realised that I can kind of do everything. And that's actually what I tell kids in college, actually. You can actually do everything if you do it in the right order. You can actually tick off all the boxes that you want to. And as we talk about my career and stuff, you'll find that I kind of try and tick every box just to make sure that I'm not missing out on anything. And then ballet kind of makes you a more versatile dancer. A lot of people forget that. Do you think that ballet structures you quite permanently, but it actually also makes you quite versatile for shows.
Okay.
I've found out later in my career, and it's actually helping me now book jobs, you know, just even literally turnout, or just even literally nice feet, or literally nice line helps you get a job over another boy that may not be as technically gifted.
It's so interesting. And so your first job was a ballet job, and then tell us about that, and more importantly, the choice to leave that, because it can be so tunnel vision with ballet. You kind of have the attitude that that's all you're ever going to do, and it's not always got those options at your doorstep like you would if you were a jazz dancer. You can kind of move a little bit more fluidly, but in ballet, it's sort of ballet or nothing. So how was that step for you?
So I got into the Queensland Ballet was the company that I got into first, and I trained with the Queensland Ballet Professional Year Program. I guess that's kind of like the last 2 years of the Royal Ballet School. Mm. And then from there, I got a job in the company, luckily. There was three of us in my year, only three of us, and three of us got jobs in the company, which is quite good. And then I stayed there for 3 years, and I guess I always knew I was never going to be a principal. I was never going to be like a soloist. I was never going to be a star or anything in that field. My other gifts were probably more leaning towards musical theatre, jazz, and even the ballet company knew that as well. So for any, you know, if there was something similar to something like a Twilight Tharp piece, they put me forward for that, opposing to be in front and centre for, say, Les Fleurs du Fide or Sleeping Beauty or Nutcracker, all those. I did them, although I was never a featured artist in any of those. I was always sort of more leaning towards contemporary dance or quirkier stuff, because my talents led me to do that. I was never a typical classical ballet dancer. So I kind of always knew that my ballet career would be short. I just always wanted to tick off ballet career anyway. So it's kind of why I did it. And then Lee Xuan Xing took over as company director, and he sort of said to me, look, I'm actually going to be terminating your contract at the end of this. The new director didn't want me to join on, but he said, I think I can do a job elsewhere at another company. And that's what he did, because he knew that my talents were not going to be classical ballet, which was the vision that his ballet company, he had for the ballet company, for Queensland Ballet. Then that led me to my next job, which was an expression dance company, which is a contemporary company. Although I loved classical, my real passion probably wasn't going to be realized until about now. So 10 years on, when I realized musical theatre is where I should have been the whole time. I just sort of kind of did a roundabout way of getting to it.
Yeah, and it's funny. I mean, Queensland Ballet is an amazing company, and so many people would fight for that job. Exactly. Yeah. People would fight for that job, and you so easily could have just sat at the back and been happy with never being the star, but being in Queensland Ballet. And it's so interesting that you did choose to kind of to keep growing and to keep learning, because so often you can just be like, right, I'm here, I'm going to settle, bish, bash, bosh, it's done.
And a lot of people, when they leave ballet companies, like, they leave on really bad terms with the director that kind of told them to leave. Yeah. And I think that because I stayed on really good terms with Lee, I talked to him, like, I was, you know, some people, you know, when they leave a ballet company, they don't, they get taken to heart or whatever, but I'm quite a businessman when it comes to stuff like this. I kind of got my head thinking what I can do.
And that's smart, because if you had left on bad terms, they probably wouldn't have lined up your next gig. I mean, a lovely director to have helped you.
That's how I got my next job. So it's kind of like, oh, yeah, good tip. Don't burn bridges, people. Oh, God. Yeah.
So from Australia, what actually got you all the way to London? Because again, you're still quite far away from now. So there must have been so much that happened in between. You must tell us.
So I was in a contemporary company called Expressions. I did that for 4 months. I didn't like it. I loved the people. I loved the people. I loved the contemporary dancing. It wasn't suited to me, the contemporary dance lifestyle, kind of doing a few gigs and then having a few months off, a few things. And I wanted something a little bit more permanent. After being in a ballet company and having that permanent job, I wanted something more permanent. So then I chose cruise ships. Actually, I went into a cruise ship, I went to work for Norwegian Cruise Lines. It was my first job. I worked there from March 2013 until October 2013. I did a contract in the Mediterranean. Fantastic. Absolutely loved it. Learned a lot of lessons, hard lessons, about people and living in cabins on cruise ships and being away from home a long chunk of time. And then since then, I moved on to another cruise line, Princess Cruises, after that, and I did 4 contracts for them, and then I did another contract after that for Royal Caribbean, and that's when I got to that's when I broke my foot on Royal Caribbean during a show. My shoe fell off and I broke a bone in my ankle, and
God.
And then that was actually the decision that made me, Robert, you've only got a short amount of time as a dancer. You've always wanted to go to London, you've always wanted to do the West End. Have a go now. So that's what made me got my ancestry visa. I was in rehab for 3 months in Australia. Nothing had swayed me in the direction until this point. I went, I've got to do it now. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, well, for starters, I did the exact same thing as you. I was in a ballet company and went on a cruise ship, and you're dead on. The things you learn, it is like a wake up call to you as a performer. No one takes care of you. Like, you have to show up, do your job, take care of yourself, learn a lot in a short space of time, and it's the best thing I ever did. So many of my friends did it as well, and we all came away like, damn, like, why was this never fed to us as a career option more? Because it is such an amazing experience, and you grow as an individual, and I think that in turn helps you as a performer so much, and it's such a lovely experience. I'm so glad to hear someone else having, I mean, you did way more contracts than I did, but it's amazing.
I loved it. What cruise line did you work for?
I was with Costa.
Oh, nice. Oh,
yeah. I mean, again, like, I was there, and it was one of those experiences where I was surrounded by girls who knew how to bevel. They knew exactly their angles. They knew how to strut. And it was...
girls know how to bevel. They always knew how to bevel.
I always felt like I had a secret. I was like, I can't tell anyone that I don't know how to do this. And the things I learned just off my castmates, like, I'm so grateful, because it was just a simple swim. And I just was like, I have to be here for 7 months and get the job done. So how they're paying
me. Get it done.
It's great. But I mean, your injury, that sounds incredibly difficult. And an injury for any dancer is so difficult. But an injury that sort of probably, I say this kind of in inverted commas, you lost your job because of an injury, because obviously you'd have to fly home. But was that, how did you process that?
I wasn't really happy on cruise ships, to be honest, after a while. I kind of got stuck a little bit. I wasn't doing any of the big shows. I just wasn't doing any of the musical theatre shows. So I don't think I was really challenged, to be honest, in the shows that I was doing. Yeah, so I think kind of it was a nice way of me leaving cruise ships in a way, because it kind of got me to leave them. Injury-wise, the Royal Caribbean was so great. They paid for my flights home. They paid for my contract. They paid my contract out. Wow. They paid for all my rehab. Good. They paid for my physio. I didn't have to have surgery, thank God. So they just paid for my physio, my rehab. So whilst I was home, I was in a good place. I was being looked after by my parents. So it wasn't exactly a horror story situation. It was a really good wake up call, and it sort of set in motion my journey to London quicker than I thought. And I'm glad that I did, because it kind of all worked out as soon as I got here. It kind of all went in. So actually, I kind of thank that injury sometimes, because where I was in my life, I wasn't happy personally. And also work-wise at that point in my life, I wasn't happy. I also get very, as we all do, very dramatic with injuries. We all think it's over. We start looking at university courses. We start looking at things. Calm down. Take a chill. Have a few months rehab, and then it takes you into another place, and then you go, oh, I'm back on it now. So when I got to London, I think within 2 months I was already rehearsing for my first show, so I was already ready on it. Even that was after auditions and things. Within 2 months of being in London, I booked a job. I was already in. So it kind of, you know, it was a, and it was Mistopheles that was the first, you know, what exactly the hard, one of the hardest roles in history, and I had to go straight from an injury back that had just come off in January straight into something like that. So yeah, it was good learning.
And I mean, like what you said, you're right, we all get so dramatic with an injury. I mean, we've all been there. And I think what's so important is to talk about it, because you're like, oh, yeah. Did you really think that you're going to have to be a waitress for the rest of your life, or like have to retrain and spend years at university? Yeah, like I thought that too. Like, it's so healthy to just allow yourself to process that way and acknowledge that it's not all that bad and that we do all feel the same way.
Yes, it's dramatic. We just think drama. It happens to people in all walks of life and all workplaces. People get injured.
Exactly. And yeah, it is. It's good to acknowledge and accept that the drama is part of what we do, but it's not the finish line.
Yeah. Yes.
So you've moved to London. I mean, firstly, miles away from home. I think that's one of the scariest and the best things about what we do is how far it takes us from home. And, you know, whether it's Australians coming to Europe or Europeans coming to Australia, you know, it's cross continent, it's time zone difference. How was that initial move for you?
So I was by myself when I first got here. I'm on an ancestry visa, which is great because it means I can get that extended and they get leave to remain. So it's quite good for me work-wise. And I kind of had a bit of a breakdown, really, to be honest, when I first got here, because I had no job. I'd saved up some money, but I had no job. I didn't have anything to come to. I got an agent when I got here, which was good, but I kind of didn't have any guidance, really. I kind of just like made my own way. I didn't have any connections here with work. I had no connections. Like, I didn't go to college here. I didn't know anyone professionally working here, to be honest. So I kind of networked the bejeebers out of the things. I kind of met people. I took class a lot. I spent hundreds of pounds on class. I bet the thousands on just going to class to meet people and just talk to them. And I had a bit of a breakdown, actually. I was also going through a breakup that I'd gone through. I'd been with a guy for 3 years on a cruise ship that I'd been with. So I was going through that still. Plus, being away from my home, being away from my family, I was like, is this the right thing to do? Have I made the right decision? Should I have just stayed home and gotten a job and gotten a car and gone to uni, done the thing and just finished cruise ships and ended my dance career there? I was going through that. And so I kind of all hit me. Things happen like that with me. It sort of just all hits me and it all just gets a bit too much for me. Sometimes a bit of a mare. But I was fine. Had a chat with my parents. Got on with it. Got to class. Kept going, made really great friends. And then I booked Cats about 2 months after that.
And what you've said is, I think, so common. And it's again, so refreshing to hear that, because it's not even about a career. Sometimes it's you as an individual and as a human. And it's so overwhelming to leave home. And like, life still happens to performers. We're not just worried about like pointing our toes and staying flexible. We have boyfriends. We have all these things that really affect us and make our time not as enjoyable. And it's, you know, moving to London, like we said, it's fast paced. It's expensive. It's incredibly competitive. And initially, to find your feet can be so difficult, but it's really inspiring. I have to say, that makes me feel so encouraged that even when you had no one, you knew no one here. It was it's the repetition and it's the investing in yourself that will build you a network and will build you a home. And we definitely all need to remind ourselves of that, because it can limit us when we think we have no options.
Yeah, that's it. Although Australia is a first world country, where I'm from, theatre isn't highly recognised. It's a sporting country. We have the climate for sport. Sporting is glorified. I've never tried for musical theatre there. Maybe I would achieve things there. However, I always thought that coming to Europe, my opportunities for theatre and opportunities for things would widen. I mean, for instance, I think in Australia, you know, they're only making a couple of new shows a year. In London, I feel like they're making a couple of new shows a week. Yes. Do you know what I mean? So it's at a bit larger scale. And although there's more people here, Australians tend to do pretty okay because we work really hard to get out of Australia, because we know that there's a lot limited opportunities for us in our own home country.
No, it makes a lot of sense. And it's a really interesting perspective. And I live in Germany now, and like, I get homesick, and I sometimes look at some of my closest friends are Australian, and I think, God, how can I be moaning about being homesick when I'm a 2-hour flight? My mum's an hour behind me on the phone, and their family are in entirely different time zones and all those things. But you're right. I think it's that hard work and gumption that gets you there, that keeps you there.
Yeah, you have that. I mean, we all have that as dancers. I think that's why when COVID shows us another restriction, another thing, I'm like, oh, dancers have been restricted for thousands of years. We're fine. Bring it at us. Come on.
Yeah, it's true. It's so true. And again, that sort of ties in really well to my next question is the rejection. Yeah. Because everything you've said, you know, you've had a stellar, on paper, an amazing career, hopping from one to next, ticking all the boxes, as you said. But anyone within the industry knows that that's not easy. And for every one job you get, you don't get three. So have you learnt to deal with your rejection?
Okay, so really good question. My first rejection was Australian Ballet School when I was 15. I was devastated. I was told by everyone around me that I'd get into the school, the Australian Ballet School. I was told by everyone. And that's the first lesson, the best lesson that I was taught at a very young age. I was 15. I come back around now to the last rejection I got. Oh, my last rejection, recent one, was Chicago, for the final of Chicago. So when I get a rejection now, I kind of just go, oh, okay, that's great. I don't ask for feedback. I don't ask why I didn't get it. That sounds probably not a good thing to say, but I've got to be honest with you. I'm just being really candid here. I don't ask why I didn't get it. Traditionally you are meant to get a yes or no. Chicago didn't give me a yes or no. I had to just assume that I got a no from the final because other people got yeses. So again, it's a little bit of a missed thing on their part. However, who cares? You didn't get the job. It shouldn't concern you because it's a job that you didn't get. So that's how I look at it. I'm quite honest with things now. I also take rejection the fact that it's got nothing to do with your dancing, yeah? It's got nothing to do with how you look sometimes. It's got nothing to do with how tall you are. Don't blame it on being the shortest dancer in the room. Don't blame it on that. Don't go down that path of blaming it on something. Do not blame your audition rejections on anything other than on that day you didn't get the job. So now you move on to the next audition. I always say to my agent, oh, that's okay. When's the next audition? What's next, yeah? You've got to have the glass of wine, have the gin, get over it, move on, walk on. Yeah, that's my take on rejection now. I wasn't like that though. Tell them I was not like this, especially when I got to London, I took it to heart.
Yeah, it makes so much sense. And again, like the way you talk, that doesn't just come from one rejection. Oh, okay, I learned this. Like that comes from a career of understanding what you need and how you get over these things. And I remember someone telling me quite early on as well, is when I was like, oh, maybe it's this, I'm just not good enough, or oh, I'm just not the right look, I'm too tall, I'm too this. And someone said, who told you that? I was like, well, yes. I told me that. I told myself that it was because I wasn't good enough. I told myself it was because I'm, you know, not as strong as her, or I can't do my backflips, or I can't get my legs high enough. I told myself that. And I think as hard as it is, and again, you know, it does come with experience, it comes with age, it comes with maturity. Okay. You do learn that it is just, it's actually nothing to do with you. They're looking for you. They're looking for the space to fill. They really want to find it. And they're gutted it's not you too, because they were hoping it was you. And it's just best to, yeah, like you said, get over it. It's okay.
I've lost shows. I've lost 42nd Street in town, Chicago, Wicked, Mary Poppins, the same. Usually I'm very honest about my rejections. I really am.
And we should be. Again, talking about it is so much better than being like, oh no, I always get yeses.
And sometimes you're not listening to exactly what the choreographer's asking of you in the room. So here's the thing I'm actually coaching my kids at the moment across the country. Really listen to the detail in a room. And don't just think you're listening to it. Really listen to the detail, because I probably would have gotten, maybe I would have gotten those jobs. Maybe if I just listened to what they said and rather gone all Robbie and done my own thing. So that's something I'm learning as well. Still learning as well. Sometimes you're just not fitting in as well. And that can be a detriment to your career as well. So always remember that before you become a star, 99.9% of the time, you're going to have to be in the ensemble. So make sure that you can just get it to a nice, you can stick to that as well without losing the star quality or whatever you want to call it that you want to still maintain through to you. You still have to pay the rent, as I say.
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. And you touched upon it there, is now that you are teaching, has that changed you as a dancer, do you think? You think now that you've learned to be on the other side, what have you taken away from that?
Yes, two things. They kind of contradict each other a little bit. I've learned how to be much cleaner as a dancer. So physically talking, literally cleaner, as in literally the arm lines and things. I've noticed how important it is as coming away from stuff and polishing my own work and making sure it's clean to present to social media, to college assessments, to performances, to competitions, to college showcases that I'm choreographing for all the time. I'm actually learning how to clean numbers now. It's a real art form to be a swing, to be a dance captain, to be an assistant dance captain. I don't have those qualities. I know I don't. But I've got an eye for detail. I've got that. So I can tell when something's out of line. So I've developed that a bit more with part of teaching. I've looked back on myself and gone, oh, that actually looks cleaner if I just do this rather than doing a Robbie thing like that. It looks better with an ensemble if you just do this. And the other thing I've realised is that to turn all the qualities that I maybe didn't get me a job in the past, I've made my choreography about them now. So all my little quirky movements that possibly didn't book me ensemble shows, I can now use in my choreography and create my own style.
Okay, how interesting.
But it kind of like, they both contradict each other, because whilst I am thankful that I can now clean numbers, I'm also thankful now that I can bring all the quirkiness that I once had to cut out of shows because it wasn't right for it.
And it's nice, and I think it's that transition that dancers have, which is rare, is actually being the boss, like you said, is actually calling the shots and going, where normally I've been told, no, not like that, or rein it in, where you actually have the opportunity now to be like, no, I want everyone to do it like that. And it's such a freeing moment.
Yeah, I think Stephen Mear has been great for me to watch. He's sort of like a mentor. I've worked with him quite a bit. And I think watching him choreograph has inspired me to also choreograph my own stuff. You know, he always inspires young choreographers. There's loads coming out at the moment due to COVID. Taylor Walker, Joe Goodwin, Jane McMurtry, Lindsay and Alex from Magnetic. And I think it's really nice that we have someone like Stephen in the business to know that he's supporting young talent as well.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
And throughout your career, what would you say is the hardest lesson that you've had to learn?
Oh, that's a good one. Other than tax.
Other than tax,
hardest lesson. Oh, there's so many. We sometimes try and escape ourselves when we go into dancing, and that's good. We have to remember to work on ourselves as well, and that's a hard lesson that I've learned. That just because I'm a good dancer doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be a nice person. You have to also make sure that you're working on all the good qualities of you as a human as well, not just your dancing. So don't just think just you're doing well in dancing, that it means that all facets of your life are great. You have to work on all facets of your life, your mental health, your diet, your exercise, how you talk to people. The hardest lesson I've learned also is to just be nice in rehearsals. Don't talk back. And that sort of stems back to growing up and maturing as well. Don't talk back, not talking back in rehearsals. And that also then stems from not talking back in life when you're, you know, going for job interviews other than dancing. That's it. That's probably the hardest lessons I've learned.
And you nail it there, because I think what often we forget is, and that we said at the beginning, is we're humans as well. And I think the pressure we put ourselves under as dancers, because we're so young and because we kind of do have this ticking clock that every moment matters, to go, 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 to just like blitz your way through a career. it puts an enormous amount of pressure on yourselves as you're growing up, and those like tender years where you're really sensitive and you're highly influenced by things around you. And we often can get ourselves into these sort of tricky situations, whether they're self-induced or whether we're getting themselves, as you said, as a way to escape them. And I think it's something we all need to get better at, is reminding that we are still young. Like, we're allowed to make mistakes, we're allowed to heal, we're allowed to grow up and evolve through what we're doing, rather than just prioritizing our career over developing as an individual.
Yeah, I think we're all still kids at heart too. Like, we're all still learning. I mean, I think also to remember too is that it's okay to make mistakes. Oh my God, I'm trying to tell the kids this at the moment. Oh my God, I was such a perfectionist. I still am to this, to be honest, and I'm still learning this lesson. It's okay to make mistakes. Oh my God, it's just rehearsal. There's people that are, you know, really going through it at the moment, financially, economically, mentally, physically. There's, you know, just because of COVID doesn't mean that, you know, domestic abuse doesn't still exist, physical violence, racial abuse. These are real issues in our society, real hard issues. If you've just got an arm out of line, don't worry. There's other things out there you need to worry about, you know. There's other things out there that are really doing the world harm. Your arm out of line in the number isn't going to change the world, you know. It's the other things that we need to focus on.
Yeah, I think perspective is so hard. And actually, I'd be interested to know, for me, what I love so much about my time on the cruise ship was the perspective you literally get when you're on the ocean. The perspective of being like, oh my God, I am a pea. There is no, I can't even see anyone in the horizon. And that for me was so refreshing to just, I used to go up onto the deck and just be like, oh my God, like, stop faffing about because you messed up your turn in the show, or you think your dance captain doesn't like you. Like, just get on with it.
Oh my God, that puts in perspective, like, lessons that I've learned on cruise ships, even just with people, with social skills. Like, you can't, like, I mean, I've thought back of things that I said to people on cruise ships. I think you can't talk to people like that. And I was told, I just think, oh my God, like, you know, the things, I was such a child when I first started. Like, I was 21, 22 when I, you know, I think because I started the job, I started the business early. I think I got the job from the ballet company I started when I was 18. Like, I was just a baby, you know, and I'm 30 next year. And I look back and I go, wow, like, sometimes I think, was I too young to start? But then I go, I probably wouldn't have done half the things I've done if I didn't start so early. The stigma of cruise ships.
Oh, so we could do a whole episode just on cruise ships, because I think they're one of the most valuable jobs in our industry. And like you just said, the stigma that they have, and people underrate them so much. I think, I don't think anyone's left that experience without feeling a bit better about themselves, learning so much, whether they choose to carry on in dance or not. You can't walk away from that without growing.
Financially, I walked away much in a much better position. I walked away, I knew what savings was. I knew what was to put money aside. I also got to London. I've got to be really honest. And I got to London, a lot of people were really rude to me that I'd done cruise ships. Thankfully, I think the career at the moment is changing a lot. Now, it's almost impossible to get a job on cruise ships sometimes now. Yeah. So I think it's thankfully changing. But I mean, I had boys that used to just write me off as a cruise ship dancer before I went into the room even.
No, it does all, it all threads through. And I think like you've said already, your career has really been a box ticking sort of tour around the dance world. And that's so great. And it's such a good story to hear. And I say this, I've said it with other guests on the podcast as well. It's so important to hear those stories of people who've made their own path and kind of gone against the grain. But I think we're fed one story, one career type and one trajectory. And I think often that doesn't happen, and it leads to a lot of people feeling really down, like they failed, upset, confused. And actually think if we continue to feedback stories like your own of choosing where they wanted to go, having ownership of their career, making the choices and exploring every avenue, and it gets to where you are now.
Exactly. It's just typecasting. People typecast people all the time. And I think bring it on, but just beware, there's people in that room that are going to dance rings around you if you do that. They will every time. If you've got to be able to be a versatile dancer when it comes to London, especially. I think versatility is your weapon, and it's your way of paying the rent. So don't typecast yourself. don't do that to yourself.
This is true. I feel like I did that. One of the scariest things for me was choosing to put down the pointe shoes. And actually it was like, but you're denying yourself all the opportunities and the much better lifestyle, the actually fulfilling myself as an artist. And I think you're right. I think it's not only other people doing it, it's you choosing, you thinking you're not capable.
And also this West End thing about people thinking that the West End is the meaning to success in life. Get that out of your head, people. It's got nothing to do with that. Because I've got just as much feeling of fulfillment on a cruise ship as I did on a West End stage. I've got to be honest. I was performing. They're both the same.
People success is what you make of it. If you're on the stage, you're killing it. You're doing it. End of story.
I think that people pursuing jobs away from the West End and wanting to do tours and wanting to do jobs overseas is fantastic. Like, I would love to, for instance, I want to do a contract in Germany. Mm. Like, that's one of my goals, was to do a contract in Germany. Like, the way the arts is, you know, glorified in Germany, as you know, there's things that people forget about when they're on their road to the West End. They forget about other opportunities that actually are better, that I think anyway.
Okay, my last question, because we have just unearthed so much goodness. I'm so excited for this to come out to everyone. But my last question, I promise, is what would be your advice to your younger self?
This is a really good quote from Margot Fontaine. Take your work seriously, but never take yourself seriously. That's what I would tell Robbie. Just relax. It's all right. It's going to be all right. That's what I would say to him. It's going to be all right. Yeah. Your life's not that bad. Do you know what I mean? Oh my god. And I still worry. I'm a warrior, but even back then I was such a warrior, worrying about whether I'd actually make it, whether I'd put my eggs into the wrong basket. I would tell my younger self that it's going to be okay. Life's going to be okay for you.
Let's end it there. That's perfect. Thank you so much, Robbie.
Thank you, Lydia.